Coming up on Fronteras, in late June, New Mexico accused 15 of its mental health providers of Medicaid fraud, froze all federal funds to these agencies, and handed management of the companies over to Arizona firms. Some say the transition isn't going so well.
All of the scheduled clients that I had have been taken off. There's no schedule, there's no computer, there's nothing.
We hear about mental health providers in New Mexico and their new owners from Arizona.
Ahorita, ahorita no hay. ¿Sí? Por eso ves varias gente que se quiere ir a su tierra.
And we remember an activist who spoke up for the men and women who find themselves stranded and destitute in the border city of Tijuana after being deported from the U.S. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. It's funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It's part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. Arizona looks to benefit from disarray in New Mexico's behavioral health system. Five Arizona agencies that work with mental health and substance abuse clients have started treating patients in New Mexico. They were hired after New Mexico launched an investigation into health groups accused of overbilling Medicaid in that state. Steve Shadley reports in this first of a two-part series on the issue, the Arizona providers will be paid millions of dollars for a few months' work.
New Mexico Department of Human Services spokesman Matt Kennicott says the investigation started after a recent independent audit identified a pattern of irregular billing practices by 15 agencies.
Those 15 agencies are currently under investigation by the New Mexico Attorney General's Office for credible allegations of fraud, including over $36 million in overpayments over the three-year period at which the audit looked.
The 15 groups under investigation treat 80% of the mental health patients in New Mexico. To ensure their care continues, New Mexico officials came to Arizona looking for help. Kennicott says they signed contracts with five Arizona clinics. One of them is Valle del Sol. It's been providing mental health care in the Phoenix area for more than 50 years. Kurt Shepard is Valle del Sol's CEO. During a tour of one of the Phoenix clinics, he walks down a flight of stairs to show off where patients receive treatment.
We're looking at a typical medical laboratory. Looks like your normal doctor's office you would see anywhere. We've gone to great lengths to ensure that we provide an environment that doesn't make people feel like they're not getting quality services.
Valle del Sol works with a lot of Hispanic and Native American patients in Arizona. Shepard says that's one reason New Mexico selected his bilingual clinic.
Valle del Sol puts a lot of emphasis on cultural competence and in embracing diversity.
Shepard says Arizona clients won't see any changes in their care. He says healthcare workers already living in New Mexico were encouraged to join the clinics his organization will take over.
Every person who wanted to transition from the previous agency to Valle del Sol of New Mexico was hired in their same job at the same salary.
Shepard claims more than 80% of the local staff has stayed on. Another provider awarded a contract in New Mexico is La Frontera Arizona in Tucson. CEO Dan Ranieri says his group had to scramble to take over six New Mexico agencies in the past few weeks.
The first organization in Las Cruces, we essentially completely transitioned operations in about 72 hours. And that involved going in and hiring most of their staff, leasing their buildings, their vehicles, their equipment.
The five Arizona health groups will share almost $18 million New Mexico has agreed to pay them through the end of the year. Some of the money will come from the state of New Mexico and some from Optum Health, the private company that manages New Mexico's health care network. The Arizona clinics could be hired permanently next year when New Mexico launches its new Medicaid program called Centennial Care.
These are highly respected, very capable agencies, and I think that they were probably recognized for their good work in Arizona.
Jim Dunn is executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Arizona, a grassroots advocacy group. The Arizona clinics are all nonprofits, but some of their employees who will be managing the New Mexico accounts will be earning supplemental pay for their work, and it could mean a lot of money. The $18 million comes at a good time for the Arizona employees and the system as a whole. Dunn explains mental health care in Arizona is already strained. Behavioral treatment programs took a big hit when Arizona lawmakers cut $75 million during the recession, and they haven't fully recovered.
We could use more funding, for sure.
But some people in New Mexico don't want to see their funds move west. State Senator Mary Kay Papen is a Las Cruces Democrat.
Don't we have anybody in New Mexico that's qualified to come in and look over the management of these agencies? So, yes, I have mistrust on the Arizona providers. We don't know anything about them.
Papen says she's hearing complaints from constituents who say they can't get their medications, but the Arizona healthcare groups say they're working quickly to reinstate care for the thousands of New Mexico clients affected by the transition. In Phoenix, I'm Steve Chadley.
And now we're going to take a closer look at how that transition is going. In this second part of our series, Tristan Autone reports from Albuquerque. It may not be going as well as state agencies claim.
They're called behavioral health agencies, and in New Mexico, these 15 served approximately 30,000 patients. Management has now been taken over by five Arizona agencies, and Matt Kennicott of the New Mexico Human Services Department says things are going well.
We have two crisis hotlines for folks to call that we monitor on a daily basis in case they feel like they're having additional troubles.
This piece of tape comes from an interview conducted by KJZZ in Phoenix. Kennicott was unavailable to speak with KUNM.
And we're able to move in with additional support, whether that be payroll or one of the transition agencies, to make sure that folks are still receiving the care that they're entitled to.
On June 24th, New Mexico's Human Services Department announced that an audit found, quote, credible allegations of fraud for 15 behavioral health agencies. Medicaid funding was immediately suspended, the audit was turned over to the state's attorney general to conduct a criminal investigation, and five Arizona firms were given emergency, no-bid contracts to take over the New Mexico organizations and their patients. The state's Human Services Department maintains that the transition is smooth.
No, it's not a smooth transition.
Paul Weeks is a therapist with Valencia Counseling Service in Las Lunas, New Mexico, now being run by Valle del Sol of Phoenix.
The agency right now is very chaotic. All of the scheduled clients that I had have been taken off. There's no schedule. There's no computer. There's nothing.
When Weeks says there's no computer, he means no computer. Anywhere. They were all removed by Valencia management when the new Arizona firm came in. Because of that, all assessments and intakes are now being done by hand.
So the assessments take approximately 2 hours to complete. That's an assessment and a treatment plan. We have three and a half therapists there doing assessments. And generously, we can do five assessments in a day.
For about 2,000 clients, they need to get back in the doors. At Valencia, many clients are extremely fragile. They're homeless or suffering from PTSD, anxiety disorders, or drug addictions. Gay Finlayson spoke outside her office in Albuquerque. Her 24-year-old son has schizophrenia.
We're having a hard time getting Neil a therapist. He was seeing a therapist at Hogaris who quit around the time of the takeover, and then we were just told that we'd be getting a phone call about a new therapist and haven't heard anything.
Hogaris was one of the agencies accused of fraud and subsequently taken over.
He counts his medication and told me, you know, I have enough pills for so many days, and then asked me a lot about, is he going to have to go into the hospital? And we were assured that you'll be taken care of, and so far we've heard nothing.
And there also seems to be problems for people receiving services from agencies that have not had their funds frozen by the state. Adrian Jones has two children receiving behavioral health counseling in Albuquerque.
Services have been so disrupted in the agencies that are involved in the audit that overflow patients who can't get their needs met at the audited agencies are filling up the other agencies, making services really difficult to get for everyone.
The state already has a shortage of mental health workers as it is.
So we've gone from crisis to emergency red status, you know, fly the flags upside down, somebody help us.
There's one other thing about the audit that accuses the behavioral health agencies of fraud. Nobody, except the state's Human Services Department, Attorney General, and State Auditor, have seen the actual audit, not even those accused of fraud. News organizations in the state have filed suit to have the full paperwork released. In Albuquerque, I'm Tristan Ottone.
Coming up from our Fronteras desk, we remember an activist who spoke up for the men and women who find themselves stranded and destitute in the border city of Tijuana after being deported from the U.S. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Men and women who land in Tijuana after being deported from the U.S. lost a great friend this week. Micaela Salcedo was one of the city's most vocal advocates for that city's vulnerable deportee population. She died September 1st after a battle with cancer. From our Fronteras desk, Adrian Florido has this remembrance.
In August of 2007, a Mexican immigrant named Elvira Arellano left the Chicago church, where for a year she'd been seeking safe harbor from deportation. She traveled to Los Angeles, but was arrested there and deported to Tijuana. The woman who greeted her at the border was Micaela Saucedo, a retired nurse and activist. That meeting motivated Saucedo, who lived in San Diego, to open a Tijuana shelter for female deportees and their children.
So she saw a wrong, and she tried to fix it right away.
Enrique Morones is a border activist who worked with Saucedo and an immigrant rights group to establish the shelter. As the shelter's director, Saucedo tried to differentiate it from others. She placed no limit on how long people could stay, realizing it often takes much longer than a week or two for a recent deportee to figure out what to do next. She often went to the border crossing, where deportees filed off of buses, and knowing that most knew nothing about Tijuana, personally invited families to her shelter.
And in the meantime, she came across the migrants in the canal.
That's the concrete canal that lines the Tijuana River. Hundreds, possibly thousands of deportees live in abject poverty in the canal as it runs along the border fence. Some have drug habits. Others are simply unable to pay the dollar a day charged by most shelters.
And that's when she started, you know, taking a leadership role. One of the most, if not the most, active person in the canals. She told us all about it.
Saucedo was a slight woman who wore glasses and graying hair. She visited the canal almost every day, talking with deportees and offering them food. And she soon realized her 10-bed shelter was not enough. Earlier this year, she moved it into a large abandoned building. She said she wanted to be closer to the canal because deportees often ran to find her when police were harassing canal residents. She also wanted to house more people, including men who make up most of the deportees on the streets. When I first met Saucedo in April, she had been arranging for the body of a young man who had been killed in the canal to be flown back to his hometown in southern Mexico. The government had paid that trip. But for Saucedo, it was a tragedy that this man's only ticket home was in a casket, because when he was first deported, the government wouldn't buy his bus ticket.
Ahorita no hay. ¿Sí? Por eso ves varias gente que se quiere ir a su tierra. Pero no hay recursos.
There's no money, she said. That's why you see so many people who want to return to their hometowns, but there's just no money. It was this large, stranded population to which Micaela Saucedo devoted the last 7 years of her life. Mar Cárdenas runs a Tijuana community center and saw Saucedo spend her own retirement income on shelter utilities and rent, even as her health deteriorated.
She struggled so much trying to make sure that there were the resources that were necessary in order to actually be able to make a difference.
When I was at the shelter's new location in April, it needed a lot of work. Its paint was peeling, there were exposed wires and no beds, only blankets on the floor. Apart from the lack of money, improvements were slow because Saucedo had been busy trying to convince police officials that raiding the canal and burning people's possessions, a common practice, would not solve the drug and public safety problems they were concerned about in the canal.
Te garroteo y te trato mal y te encarcelo. Ellos ya están viendo que eso no funciona.
They treat them poorly and they jail them. And they're beginning to see that doesn't work, she said.
Hay que tratarlos, pero de ayudarlos. ¿Cuál es tu problema, no?
Let's try to help them. Ask what they need. I can solve their problems of hunger, cold, and shelter. But when it comes to their larger problems, we need to work together. Saucedo died early Sunday morning at her son's home in Chula Vista after a battle with cancer. She was 67. Because she was its main driving force, it's unclear whether her shelter will continue to operate. In San Diego, I'm Adrian Florido.
In response to a call from the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, dioceses across the country will hold Mass with an immigration theme this coming Sunday. From our Fronteras desk, Joey Palacios reports as the immigration debate continues this month, the Church wants its prayers answered by Congress.
As bells signal Mass on Sunday, the sermon in many churches will focus on the nation's immigrants and a revised citizenship path. Dioceses in 22 states are participating. Kevin Appleby is a director of migration policy for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Every day a priest or a layperson gets approached by an immigrant saying, you know, my parent's been deported, my parent is in detention, my loved one's lost in the desert, what can you do to help my family? And unless we change the law in a positive way, there's not much we can do.
Appleby says the Mass is not meant to be political, but to encourage parishioners to contact their congressperson.
Our laws should be updated to reflect the reality of migration in the current century.
Anywhere from 50 to 60% of the nation's predicted 11 million undocumented are likely to be Catholic or Christian by the conference's estimates. The Archdiocese of San Antonio will hold a Mass for immigrants and families that will be televised into Mexico. Antonio Fernandez is the president of the Archdiocese charitable arm.
Actually, we're not celebrating, we're not asking, we are just praying for people to make the right decision and to allow people in a controlled way to actually get to the United States.
The conference has planned 2 months of pilgrimages and Masses focused on immigration reform. In San Antonio, Joey Palacios reporting.
Ongoing drought and decades of overgrazing have devastated grasslands on the Navajo Reservation. With a wild feral horse population in the tens of thousands, the tribe has made the difficult decision to round up as many of the animals as possible. Most of those horses will end up at a slaughterhouse in Mexico. Rita Daniels went on a roundup and has this report.
At daybreak, a group of Navajo cowboys hired by the tribe's Department of Agriculture set up a corral at a lone windmill. Then they spread out on horseback and ATVs in search of the animals. The man in charge, Ray Castillo, is scouting from a hilltop.
As we were driving in, there was 8 of them right down here, so figured we'd go after them first. The further in there we go, the more horses we're probably going to start finding.
This is a problem all over the western United States, but on the reservation, it's estimated there are somewhere between 60 and 75,000 feral horses. Officials say that's 4 times what the land can support. So the Navajo tribe has decided to round up as many as possible and sell them.
The stray horses are just dominating windmills, wells, natural springs, coming to corrals, breaking into hay barns, causing damage. So
Kim Johnson runs the reservation's grazing management program. She says earlier this summer, the president issued an emergency drought declaration that earmarked $1.3 million to deal with the feral horse problem. About 60 communities, more than half the reservation, have requested roundups.
There's also animals out there that are injured, and, you know, no one's there to take care of them. They're just dying a slow death.
Once rounded up, the unbranded animals are immediately sent to auction.
The unbranded ones are sold to buyers that are bonded by the Navajo Nation, and I believe the destination is Mexico to a slaughter processing plant.
With the horse market at an all-time low, the Navajo Nation is getting somewhere between $10 and $20 per head. A quarter of what it costs to bring them in off the range. Recently, the tribe has officially come out in support of a horse slaughter processing plant that's trying to open closer to home in New Mexico. A lawsuit has temporarily stopped it from happening. Ernie Zaw is a spokesman for the Navajo Nation. He says this has been a really difficult decision to make.
We have a kinship with our surroundings. Horses are part of our creation myth. They are part of who we are as people. You know, that's where those old ceremonies come in of asking for their help by eating their meat. You know, because at times during the winter months, you know, our people used to do that to get strength. You know, they're revered.
As the sun climbs higher into the sky, a man who lives nearby pulls up and speaks to Zaw.
Uh-huh.
He's saying that there's 80 horses over here that he knows of, that there's 100 horses in these canyons back over here, and that they come to this watering hole around noon, he says. So he's chuckling a little bit that we got an early start. He says they don't run on human time.
Suddenly a herd of these wild, feral horses run full tilt toward the corral.
You can see some coming down right there, the dust kicking up, and here they come. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven horses. They're in the corral. That's just awesome.
Throughout the day, more than 40 horses are rounded up.
This is not something we came to as an abrupt solution. This is something that we've weighed, we've thought about, we've prayed about. This is the best way we see to help manage our horse population.
Some members of the Navajo Nation say taking such drastic measures with a sacred animal should be reached through consensus. Ernie Zaw says the president's office is just trying to manage the nation's resources responsibly. For the Fronteras Desk, I'm Rita Daniels.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. We're online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. Go ahead and join the conversations and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You may subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. The theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.